really wish you'd tell me about it.
Well, if you must know, it's me love life.
Really? You've been seeing a man?
Only when I close my eyes and concentrate.
And that's from Frasier. And what happens when you have that longing? You have a wonderful longing for a partner, and you're just sitting home all day long. Or in Daphne's case, she's obviously working and doesn't give herself a life outside of work, or much, not much of a life. But you still want the goal. Well, you need to go back to the drawing board and check your premises. And the premises of just sitting, hoping it will happen, hoping that you walk into a convenience store someday and meet somebody, is not a good strategy. If you definitely want a romantic partner, you need an action plan. Now, that sounds pretty technical, but you do need to do the thinking of, how am I going to meet a potential partner? You also want to give yourself the advantage of imagining success, imagining having completed the goal of having found your romantic partner, because that gives you hope. Instead of imagining that you'll never ever find a romantic partner, which leaves you in a muck of depression. So these are some of the thinking skills that I can help you with. I'm Dr. Ellen Kenner, and my show is The Rational Basis of Happiness. And right now, let's turn to the phones and welcome Cindy. Cindy, you're dealing with anxiety.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, tell me, what's going on?
I've had panic attacks since I was 8 years old.
8 years old.
And I think I've pretty much trained myself to be very anxious. And I'd like to know if there's any way that I can calm down once I'm in anxiety.
Oh, my gosh. Am I glad you called? Because there are so many relatively easy skills that you can learn. They're not easy in the learning process. You know, it's like learning to ride a bike. It's easy once you've learned it. But
yes,
these are thinking skills. And what I like that you're doing is you've already started to own responsibility, that I trained myself to be anxious. If you were my client, you know, this isn't therapy, but if you were my client, I would say that kudos to you for even having that perspective, because if you can train yourself one way, what does that tell you about yourself?
I can train myself the other way.
Oh,
and help
you
myself.
Bet. You bet. And that you're open to learning skills. The fact that you call into a talk show means that you're open to, you're eager to learn new skills. You're motivated. Now, when you say that, and I do want to give you skills, I want to tell you about cognitive therapy. Cognitive is a dressy name for thinking therapy. And I want to first find out what happened, if you feel comfortable telling me this in a nutshell, what happened at the age of 8 that triggered your initial anxiety, if you can remember it?
It was actually earlier than that, being sexually abused, and I was actually sexually abused for years.
Okay.
Into being a teenager, and so I do know that that's part of it, but that's when it really kind of hit me. And, you know, I was pretty shy and that sort of thing, and I think it just all of a sudden, just the weight of it just came down on me.
And you had a panic attack.
Yes.
And so let me tell you what being sexually abused does to anybody, male or female. What it does is it destroys, or it has the potential, and often does, because people don't know how to preserve themselves during such an intense violation of their own life. It destroys your view of people, because how do you look at people if you've been sexually abused and you feel that you just go along with it?
Yes.
Your view of people is what? That they're wonderful? That every person's a potential adventure? Or what? Every Yes, you're laughing. What does it do to your view of people?
I'm very standoffish a lot of times, and I don't want to be. I want to have friends in my life and that sort of thing, but I feel kind of secretive, and I feel like if they knew the real me, you know, that they would shun me, that sort of thing.
Okay, so like damaged goods, you've got that premise going too. Okay, so do you have paper in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, notice the first thing I said was your view of people. It damages that. How profound is that?
I mean, profound.
Yeah, like if my view of alligators, because I live in Rhode Island, doesn't affect me. You know, I'm not in Florida, right? So if I hate or love alligators, what difference does it make? But if it's my view of people, I interact with people nonstop around the clock. And if I feel inadequate around them, if I feel like I have some hidden dirty secret that if they knew they wouldn't like me, then that leads to what's called, and you can jot this down, a coping strategy of being standoffish. Right? Or avoiding them, only letting them get to a little bit close, but then you don't form the deep friendships that enrich a life.
Yes.
Okay. So the next, so it attacks, that type of trauma attacks your view of the world. It also attacks something else, which you've already addressed. What is your view of yourself? Do you see yourself as a vibrant person who's good to the core, who's honest, and who is worthy and capable of going out and setting your own wonderful goals and pursuing them?
I have two different views of myself. I see myself as a good person on one hand, but I see myself as extremely needy and I have a very hard time asking people for what I want, what I need. I feel like I'm going to impose on people. And, you know, even, you know, my husband, my kids, they just, I feel sometimes like I'm going to be in the way.
Okay, so it's not that you're a clingy person. If anything, you're trying to be so self-reliant that you're not good to yourself. People can't do for you.
I feel like I'm being very needy, and a lot of times people are like, you know, they'll tell me later on, geez, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you realize? And I feel like I'm screaming it out, and I'm not. I'm keeping it close to my chest.
So you want those two views of yourself. You want the healthier one to eventually tip the balance to win in your psychology? The one that is more comfortable with your kids and comfortable in letting down the guard at times?
Yeah.
You want that one to win. So if I'm telling you that, basically I'm hearing that your anxiety is trauma related, the panic attacks you have now. When you feel panic, I'm going to give you some skills to deal with them right now, but I definitely would love you to go to, you can go to my website, drkenner.com. And there are books there that are excellent. Mind Over Mood is excellent. You can even go to the Academy of CT for Cognitive Therapy website and read some of the literature there, because anxiety is so manageable. If you get yourself a cognitive therapist, I think that this can be history for you, these panic attacks. Skills to calm down. If you're flooded with what-ifs, what if they don't like me? What if they hurt me? What if I'm a burden to them? That can trigger anxiety, because you have anxiety is due to uncertainty and self-doubt. Can you see that, Cindy?
Yes. Yeah.
And so instead, you want to, that other view of yourself that's stronger, more robust, like a stronger muscle, you want to give that some say. Well, what if not? What if they really want me to reach out? What if they want me to talk? Would I be willing to experiment once or twice? So get the what if nots in there rather than the catastrophic what ifs.
Okay.
And that should help you. Listen, I wish we had a lot more time to talk about this. We don't. But definitely, your answer is yes. There are a lot of strategies to calm down when you're feeling anxious. And I think if you have the richness of the understanding that you do, that it's due to trauma, that you can work to change your core ideas about yourself and the world. Thank you so much for calling. I'm Dr. Ellen Kenner on the Rational Basis of Happiness.
Here's an excerpt from The Selfish Path to Romance, the Serious Romance Guidebook by Drs. Kenner and Locke.
Irrationality is one basis for divorce, but often differences can be reasonable. Two reasonable people may discover they are seriously mismatched. For example, one may have a career that requires long work hours, and the other wants a companion who has more time to spend together. Personalities may conflict. One partner may be formal and quiet, and the other extroverted and boisterous. Or they may have just grown in different directions. Not Not all irreconcilable differences are moral issues. Many are just a matter of decent partners discovering that they are personally incompatible and wanting to find more compatible partners. Both partners have the right to end the relationship with mutual respect.
You can download Chapter 1 for free by going to drkenner.com, and you can buy the book at amazon.com.